You are listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, spirit, community, environment, and economy, all six areas of the healthful living model, and you can read more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate with Healthful Living. And you can hear this show and any past shows of Reality Sandwich that you want to at realitysandwichradio.com. Every week we venture to bring you insightful topics on, as we mentioned, the healthful living model in all six areas and really how to help improve our world. We all have different views on what's going on in our world today and all commonly agree on the need for change. The need for change. And each week we try to bring you topics and insights on how to help you become an activist every single day to help intervene in some way to improve your world and the world of really everything for all of us. And to that very end, we have today, I'm very excited to have with us Mr. Michael Norton. He's calling in from the UK, and I'm going to bring him on the line in just a moment. And he is a social entrepreneur who actively sets out to change the world. So, hence, we like him right off the bat. In 1975, Michael founded the Directory of Social Change to provide grants, information, advice, and training on fundraising, management, and communication to nonprofits. And since 1995, he's been designing and promoting new initiatives to promote volunteerism, including Changemakers, which is an organization that encourages young people to go out and change the world, and Youth Bank, which enables young people to make grants in their local communities. He's the author of a dynamic new book called 365 Ways to Change the World, How to Make a Difference One Day at a Time. Let's welcome to the show, calling in from England today, Mr. Michael Norton.
Hi there. I'm really pleased to be with you.
Michael, thank you so much for joining us today. We really wanted to connect with you because your book has practical insights, ways that each and every person can just add some thoughts to their mind about how their way of being, their actions, their results impact the world, and you're creating an entire movement to help move this forward and help change the world.
Well, I don't think I'm creating the movement. I hope I'm part of a movement.
Yes, yes.
Which says that if there are problems, then someone has to do something about them, and that someone could be you, me, or anyone listening. And change has to start with one person taking that first step. You know, sometimes people ask me, what is the biggest problem facing the world? Is it AIDS? Is it poverty? Is it conflict? Is it corruption? What is it? And I say, it's almost certainly none of those. What it is apathy. It's the fact that people can see problems around them and they do nothing about them. And if you do nothing, everyone else will probably do nothing and nothing will happen.
Yes, people have learned, unfortunately, that they become afraid that, you know, what they do doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, and then my second idea is that you don't start by changing the world by doing something massive. Do something little, enjoy it, have fun. And when you realize that you can make a difference, then you might want to make a bit more of a difference or find out more and get really involved.
Yes, absolutely. I think we talk about that quite often on the show, is that people don't even, we become so afraid to even begin because we don't feel we're going to have an impact, so why even bother? And then that apathy that you speak of really is what keeps us all kind of stuck in our place.
Yeah, I mean, I was giving a talk the other day, and one of my favorite websites is the Rainforest site. And if you visit it and you click on it at therainforestsite.com, you will save one square meter. That's a bit more than a square yard of rainforest. And it works because rainforest isn't that expensive, and the site sponsor pays for every person who visits the site and sees the advertising. And so save one square meter tomorrow. Make it your home page, save it the next day and the day after, and then you'll begin to feel that you're making a difference. You know, in a year, you could have saved 365 square meters of rainforest. Do it with 10 friends, that's 3,650. Set up a local clickers group to click and save the rainforest, and meet occasionally to see who's done the most clicks. Have a drink, have a coffee, have a tea, whatever it is. and talk about the rainforest. And maybe, you know, you'll get so interested in the rainforest that you'll decide to do something.
So
that's a little thing that actually takes a second of your time, does something specific. It does save one square meter. Your action saves that square meter of rainforest.
Yes.
Without it, there'd be one square meter less saved.
We're all spending minutes of our time all the time. And it's just that I think the more that we get some thoughts and ideas in our mind, you know, focusing ourselves in positive directions, collectively, that's got to have a significant impact. Can you please share with your with our listeners a bit more of your background, Michael, about because you've been working to change the world for many, many years, and just how is it that you got oriented in this direction years ago, and what are some of the highlights of the things that you've been doing?
Yeah, I mean, for all of us, there's a trigger point which triggers our interest in making the world a better place. You know, we go up, we learn things at school and college, and we maybe sort of think learning is an end in itself. We then get a job where money-making becomes an end in itself. And then somehow, somewhere, something happens. It may be that a friend of ours has died of cancer, and we set up an appeal to raise money for a cancer ward in a hospital. And that can be a starting point for someone. It may be that we see some figures. One figure that bothers me an awful lot is to do with bottled water. The global bottled water industry is about $25 billion a year dollars. And the United Nations reckon that it would cost less than that to bring clean, fresh water to everyone on the planet, 1 billion of whom are suffering from lack of access to clean water. So what sort of world are we, where we drink bottled water, often traveling over thousands of miles to get to us, and our fellow human beings are drinking dirty water and getting diseased, and their families aren't surviving? And so start feeling that you can do something about that problem. You can give up drinking bottled water, and you can donate the money to a water charity, for example. And you feel you're doing something. Now, for me, my trigger point was my dad saying to me when I left college, "Are you going to do any voluntary work?" And I said, more or less, "What's that?" Because I had no tradition of it. And he said, "Well, when I was your age, I used to go to a youth club and work with young people and inspire them and encourage them. Why don't you do the same?" So I didn't want to have an argument, so I said yes. I had to ring up someone with the improbable name of Yogi Bear, who fixed me up at a youth club, and I went along every Monday evening. And I really enjoyed it, and I enjoyed inspiring the young people at the club to do really interesting things in their local neighborhood. And then I went on to found my first organization, which provided language teaching for immigrant children and families coming to my country without any English at all. And I did that as a volunteer. I was a banker and then a publisher. And then I decided to change the direction of my life and became a sort of non-profit professional when I was age 30.
And your most recent, this is your most recent book, yes, 365 Ways to Change the World?
Yes and no. It is a recent book. I've also written a book on fundraising, which was published in May, and I've got another book which is due out in October called The Everyday Activist. 365 Ways is a book of sort of inspirations, ideas, lots of information, facts, figures, case studies, things that are unusual, things that you say, wow, I didn't know that that could be like that, and then simple practical things to do. My next book is, once you've started doing these little practical things, how do you seriously set about changing the world? And I track the stories of about 45 ordinary people who have done some quite extraordinary things, starting with that one first step, actually. And the book starts with two people, and you could time to the minute when they made that step in a direction that was going to change the world.
Right, right. I'd love for you to speak a little bit about some of these different areas, or just some of your thoughts that come to your, you know, from the top of your head here, content from the book, or really any of these experiences around little actions that people have taken, new insights that they've gleaned either, you know, through the book or through being connected with 365act.com.
Yeah.
And
it varies. I mean, the book starts very simply on January 1st. Make a New Year's resolution and create a revolution in the world by you becoming an activist. And I quote Samuel Beckett, who says, "No matter, try again, fail better." And that's been a motto in my life, in a way, that you don't have to succeed. Trying is more important than succeeding. Taking that first step, trying to do something. And then on day two, January the 2nd, you clear the agenda, make amends. There are people in life who you've crossed, who've done things you've had a row with and you haven't made up with. Take the opportunity to say sorry and start again. And someone wrote to me saying they'd done day two, they'd done making amends, and the person they'd made amends with happened to work for Google. And Google have this really interesting program called Google Partners, where they can give grants to non-profit organizations through a Google member of staff. So by making amends, this act came back to them with spades on, because they end up getting a grant from Google through the Google partnership. And that was just a little thing that someone told me about. And then it goes on. So day three is climate change. Now, I went to hear Al Gore the other day speak about an inconvenient truth. It is an inconvenient truth. It is almost certainly a truth that the climate is changing and the world around us is going to be something that we won't recognize in 20, 30 years' time unless we do something about it now. And so what do I do? One of the things I do is I cycle around London. And actually, this is for another date in the book. On the 9th of June, I joined in the World Naked Bike Ride to celebrate the joys of cycling, going as bare as I dared, along with 1,000 other people in London. So, you can have fun as well. And one of the things I really do advocate is that we change the world not out of a sense of guilt, not out of a sense of duty, but because we really enjoy doing it.
Yes. Yes.
Last night I went out and had a really nice meal in a restaurant, and I was thinking to myself as I was going home afterwards, would I get more pleasure by not having had that meal, but by donating that same amount of money, which is a significant amount of money, restaurants in London are really quite expensive, to changing someone's life or changing a community or building a village library or something? Would I get more pleasure from doing that or having another meal out? I think the answer is obvious, actually. You can take real pride in some of the good things you do. And in my book, what one should do is not give money to big non-profits, but get much more directly involved in linking with what you're doing and what you're achieving. So, and actually, there's a really nice story. Someone from San Francisco, actually, called Mark Gold, who set up a little thing called 100 Friends. And he gathers together people and he says to them, I'm going on holiday in interesting parts of the world, in poor parts of the world, and when I go on holiday, I'm going to put some of my own money to solving problems that I come across. Would you like to join with me and give me some of your money so I can give it all away? And he goes and builds libraries and schools, and he provides bags of rice for widows who have no means of support, and he eye operations for people, and he reports back to his friends, who are his supporters. And I just got an email from him the other day. He's doubled his income over the year from about $45,000 last year to about $85,000 this year. It's a really great way of helping people, because there's no bureaucracy, there's no administrative costs. Mark goes at his own expense. And I think it's just really great. I call him a one-man aid agency. And he sees things on the ground that the big agencies wouldn't even notice.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, it's just absolutely fascinating, because all of us inside, when asked about what we would really like to be doing in the world, most people end up saying something like, helping others. In some way. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we really felt personally empowered to be able to do that with all these things that we each interact with on a daily basis, when we see something or we read about something and we say, boy, couldn't that just be, better this way or that way?
Yeah, and sometimes you just need to do something very little and you will help others. So I'm just reading through the first pages of the book, January the 4th, Coffee at a Fair Price. Fair trade coffee provides a decent livelihood for coffee growers. Other coffee may not, increasingly, chains like Starbucks are switching to fair trade because they know that they should have a sort of obligation to ensure that the people who supply them make a living wage. But we can put pressure on people like Starbucks by going in and asking for fair trade coffee at the counter, or we can go to the supermarket and buy fair trade coffee ourselves. And that little act may be a little bit more expensive, often isn't, but will change people's lives. So there are lots of ways of doing things in the world, just in the way we lived our lives, to be aware of problems around us and do things a little bit differently.
Absolutely. Here at Reality Sandwich and through our organization, Healthful Living, we speak of that about focusing on what is the healthier choice to be making. And we speak about being in pursuit of health in six particular areas: body, mind, spirit, community, environment, and economy. So helping to reorient ourselves to that consciousness in the moment that, well, what's a healthier choice? Being aware of where my money goes and what it reinforces by making a choice, as you were saying, about, you know, a free trade coffee, for example, or not thinking about that and just reinforcing a Starbucks in a mega behemoth corporate entity that we know is, well, in my opinion, you know, sucking some of the planet dry. So reorienting ourselves towards healthful choices in all these different areas. And I see that for, like, health of body, for example, right here on page 5, start drinking.
Yeah. But drink locally. Drink homemade beer made in people's cellars, which has a bit of character, and reduce your beer miles. So a lot of beer has traveled thousands of miles to reach you because it's come from a factory to a distribution center to a supermarket into the back of your automobile and then into your home. And drink local, eat local, and immediately the traffic on the roads will begin to reduce. And that must be good for all of us because not only will there be less congestion, but the air will be cleaner too.
Yes.
Little things like that. And actually, drinking beer, and we've got some sort of recipes from the Brew Your Own website. Black Pear Oyster Stout, Wild Rice Helles Bock, Original Hempen Ale, and Smoked Maple Amber Ale. And you can make all of those. You can get the recipe online and at www.byo.com. All you need to know to brew your own beer. And the beer will be nicer than the insipid, tasteless stuff that we're served up with.
Absolutely. And certainly more satisfying because we made it ourselves. We didn't just go spend money to get it.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening to someone on the radio this morning talking about the impact of television that's made us all passive observers. We sit there, we flop in front of the television, it's on, we listen. We're not engaged and involved in the sorts of things that people were doing 30, 50 years ago, where they were much more creative in their lives, much more communication between people. And we're becoming sort of mindless consumers. And then we're served up with the junk that we're deserved. So one way away from that is to be a sort of sensible consumer and to think about what you consume and how you're consuming it. Think about the waste, the packaging, and all sorts of things. We've got a very establishment group in our country called the Women's Institute, very middle-class, middle-of-the-road women who do things together in villages, like make jam and sew clothes and whatever. And I'm sure in the United States you've got similar groups. Last year they organized a Take Back the Packaging campaign because they were so upset at the increasing levels of packaging when you buy food in a supermarket. Every fruit coming in its own, not just one layer of plastic, but probably three layers. So they got their members to start collecting all the plastic packaging. And on one day, last year, they all took back the stuff to the supermarkets with a letter saying, "You deal with this. The polluter should pay, and you're creating this rubbish in society."
What do you say to those who get a bit upset about that type of activism? Yeah, who say that, oh, well, now you're causing more trouble by, you know, putting a pressure back on the business to deal with this.
Yeah, well, I think that activism is great, and I believe everyone has a right to. I think it's written into your constitution that people have the right of free speech and free assembly, and that you may disagree with one point of view. Well, you can organize your own campaign in an opposite way. I think it's a healthy democratic society where people are active citizens, and you learn the sort of techniques of how to change policies and change people's points of view, and you know, you go out and do that, and it's not rocket science, and it again starts with simple things that people can do. I just read a book called How to Change the World in Your Spare Time that's been published in Canada, and the author talks about lessons learned on my grandmother's knee about activism, because her grandmother, actually I think it's her mother, was a pioneer anti-nuclear activist in Connecticut. And those lessons have stood her in good stead. She's now director of the Sierra Club in Canada, and she is protecting the forests, the environment, the watercourses, the shoreline. Really important, but you need to be a campaigner to do that. And as I said earlier, that first small step in that direction could be a journey of a lifetime for you.
You even got a page here on being a virtual volunteer, so it's not always necessary to get out physically and do something, yeah?
Yeah, and I'm writing a synopsis for a book called How to Change the World with a Click of Your Mouse, because I think there's an awful lot we can do without leaving our home, which will make a difference.
Mm. And I'd like to speak a little bit about, any further points or tips or experiences around this notion of our individual impact on our economy. As you were saying, we have all become just consumers, and we take in information, and we buy, and we've talked quite a bit about that on the show. But
yeah,
one of the more difficult things I find is reorienting people's consciousness around the power of their money and where their money is and how they spend their money and what they do with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's complicated because if we spend money, we fuel the economies of the world and everyone gets prosperous. If we stop spending money, we can cause recessions and declines. On the other hand, the world is filling up with discarded junk. I mean, the computer waste each year that people get rid of is just phenomenal, and a lot of it is poisonous. There are many people in the world who don't have enough, whereas we have too much. So I think sensible consumption is a good thing. And I like the idea of Buy Nothing Day, where one day at the end of November is promoted as a day where you spend not a penny on buying things, just to make yourself conscious that you can buy nothing. And again, I read a book. It's a book published by my American publishers, and it was about a year of buying nothing. A couple who spent a year deliberately trying to reduce their consumption to an absolute minimum, and the impact on their lives. And actually, the impact was not all bad. A lot of it was wonderful. And obviously, they missed certain things, but there were compensations of the things that they had, which they wouldn't have had if they'd just been mad spenders.
Mm. I'm reading from the book here about boycotting bad companies. You said here that boycotts work. Canadian forests, Mexican salt marshes, whales, and the seabeds have all benefited from boycott activity in the past.
Yeah.
I always remember the dolphin save tuna thing back in 20-something years ago.
Yeah.
People do have the ability to share a common theme and sentiment amongst themselves and collectively shift something.
Yeah, and influence the big governments, big companies, and so on, to change their policy or behavior. And like fair trade, free trade, you know, the argument is now established that we should be buying things that are not made by child labor, that are not made by sweated labor being paid less than the minimum wage, are not made by poor farmers who are not paid enough to survive. We as rich consumers have a duty to make sure that people who supply us with our needs are adequately remunerated. And we've got that message across. Governments now believe this, and big corporations increasingly believe it.
And there are some ongoing campaign boycotts here that you mentioned in the book that I feel are fairly notable. The Coca-Cola boycott, and can you speak just briefly about this Nestle?
Yeah, well, Nestle started because of the baby milk action, that they were flooding the developing world with formula milk, powdered milk, and discouraging breast milk, breastfeeding, as a result. And people in the developing world look at these branded products, and they think they're a sign of wealth and affluence and so on, and they want them because it sort of reminds them that they're no longer as poor as they thought they were. So there's a huge swing against breastfeeding in the developed world, in the developing world. And people started pointing this out to Nestle, that that formula milk should not be promoted, and breast milk should be not just advocated, but wholeheartedly encouraged as the safe food for young children, because particularly in the developing world, where the water may not be clean, people get all sorts of diseases from having formula milk, as well as not having a fully balanced intake of sort of you know, all these things that stop you getting diseases and things that are naturally in breast milk. And then it sort of begs the question too, that poverty needs to be relieved, because nursing mothers need to have an adequate diet in order to produce the milk to feed the babies and so on. So problems are complicated. They're not all simple. But the Nestle's boycott was directly on this, to influence Nestle's to change their practice on the sale of formula milk in the developing world.
And have you seen, what evidence have you seen that some of these boycotts have been effective?
It's not just the boycotts, it's local action as well. And I do some work in India, and one of the things I'm doing is creating information in villages that will encourage breastfeeding and better childcare practice. So it's a mixture of things. You can't just point at one thing and say, that has solved the problem. You know, Bill Gates is not going to solve the problem of AIDS, HIV in the world on his own. He may be pumping huge amounts of money through his foundation into the Global Fund and will be making a huge difference doing it. But it's a mixture of all sorts of things happening at all sorts of levels. Inspired health workers in villages, passionate people in your country advocating points of view, as well as rich philanthropists giving away huge amounts of money. Together we make changes.
You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. This is Reality Sandwich, and today we're on the line with Michael Norton, calling in from England. He is the author of a number of different books, but the one that I'm looking at right now is, and that we're speaking about today, is 365 Ways to Change the World. Michael, on that point that you were just making, can you speak about what sort of other activity have you been seeing by way of, be it entrepreneurs, be it very wealthy people with foundations, others now in the past few years coming forward to play a more demonstrative role with regard to applying their resources and capability to help effect positive change?
Well, I don't think there's anything new, because the big philanthropists of the past, Henry Ford, Andrew Carnegie, Rockefeller, set up huge, influential, important foundations with their wealth. And what we're seeing now, I think, is something slightly different, which is that wealth is being created much more quickly and to a much greater level of wealthiness than in the past. So the sort of internet millionaires, the private equity fund barons and so on are creating wealth at astonishing rates. And what's interesting is there is, well, I think two things. One is they realize they can't take it with them, so they may as well do something useful with it. I think the second thing, which is that...
Okay, boy, this is one of those awkward moments where it seems that I've lost my guest on the phone there. So we're going to have to wait for just 2 seconds to get Michael back on the line. But we've been speaking today with Michael Norton. He's the author of 365 Ways to Change the World. And when we get him back on the line, we're going to hear a little bit more about what's been taking place with respect to an increase in involvement by long-time and even new-time now entrepreneurs, individuals with capital, with their own capability to channel their resources towards helping affect positive change. We're going to take a quick music break, and we should be right back. If
can choose. There's no time, no chance, they can hurt you. Don't you worry, that is pointless. A pound of fretting not worth a quarter of debt. Don't go compete up in a pity every neck. Then what next? What about the scornful dog when your Babylon dirty pudding? Good sheep of old get a youth rescuing. If a bit be careful what you're doing. Amen. Oh, if time is for you, tell me who can be against you. Fret not thyself of evil doers, yeah. Oh, who feels it knows. So the world is upon your shoulders. Know that they then take and I told you.
See what we gotta do now. Stop the children from dying. What we gotta do now. Stop the people from suffering. What we gotta do now. Change.
Stay tuned to Reality Sandwich. We're just trying to get our guest, Michael Norton, back on the line from England. Are back. Back on the line with Michael Norton from England. Are you there, Michael?
Yes, I am. Okay. I'm sorry about that.
That's all right. These international connections can get fuzzy.
Yeah. Well, we should marvel at the fact that I can actually be in your studio now with you from 5,000 miles away.
The world is definitely getting more connected, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which gives us more opportunity to be aware of our impact, yeah?
Yeah, and can I just highlight a really interesting website? It's called Kiva.org, K-I-V-A.org. And through that, you can, with a minimum of $25, you can help a sort of budding entrepreneur, maybe a widow with a young family in an African country like Nigeria, start up a business. And what you do is you lend money to them on a website, and they collect the money they need through various people who want to support them, and you can choose from several hundred people all looking for loans. And when they've made their business work, you get your money back. And what I do is I do this, but I also, every night when I empty my pockets, I put my spare change in a bowl. And it's that money that I use to invest in entrepreneurs in the developing world. So I'm having a direct impact on one or two families' lives by giving them a hand up at a crucial time. I'm not giving it to them, lending it to them, so I get my money back later on. And because it's my spare change, I don't even notice it. You know, you put your pennies and your dimes and your nickels and whatever in and your quarters in well, I use a sort of just a cereal bowl. And when it's full, I take it to the bank, and it's maybe $100 or something I've saved in no time at all. So a little thing, and you suddenly feel good about yourself, that you've had an impact on someone's life for the better.
I want to ask you, because you are from England, and you've done some traveling, I'm sure, across the globe. Are you seeing now, today, a different orientation culturally and or awareness about our impact on the world? Are Americans different from Brits, different from others that are kind of waking up in regard?
I think in Europe we are more concerned about the global environment, and we certainly came to the issue of global warming much more quickly than you did. But I think basically the same issues around the world. We're an interconnected world. If we have poisoned oceans, if we have the fish removed by huge trawlers so that you know, there are no cod left and a lot of the fish stocks are disappearing, they affect all of us. If you drop a bit of litter on the beach in Australia, it may wash up in San Francisco. You know, we are a connected world. If you are living in Tuvalu, which is a group of Pacific islands, which are one of the lowest-lying countries in the world, they're going to be the second country to disappear under global warming. They have to go somewhere. In fact, New Zealand's going to take them. But what about the people of Bangladesh? Where are they going to go? We are all connected to all the world's problems, and I think we're more aware of that these days.
I want to ask your professional insight here about speaking with people who just don't get it. I end up sometimes in conversations with those that are so clung to their introspective, unifocused perspective that nothing they do is going to impact the world. I'm not going to, you know, stop orienting on myself and taking care of myself because, you know, you got to look out for the, you know, number one, and start talking to me about how I'm going to spend $5 to help somebody on the other side of the planet.
Yeah.
I mean, the people
yeah.
that are just so rigid and so stuck and just make me pull my hair out, do I just avoid them? Do we not talk to them? Do we only focus on those who are listening? I mean, what's your take on all that?
Yeah, well, I think that they will come round in the long run. I wouldn't get upset by it. There are always going to be people like that. Mm. There are always going to be, you know, for example, if we all carpooled, there'd be half the traffic on the roads, but we don't, and there's no point getting annoyed at all those people driving single person in large SUVs or Hummers or whatever, because they'll just continue to do that. But what we do is we start to change people's perceptions, and things suddenly become not acceptable, and it may take time. So we, if you like, are pioneers of change. We come up with ideas which we've thought through, which are good for society, good for the environment, good for us as well. And gradually, everyone will come to accept those ideas. Just like fair trade, free trade is now accepted as what everyone should be doing.
Yes.
So, you know, we might have got annoyed at Starbucks years back, but they have come round to it, the supermarkets, and now coming round to stocking just fair trade coffee. And I think the problem at the moment is to have the certification so that enough coffee can be produced through that process.
Yes. And it wasn't that many years ago that we had a completely different orientation about the role of women in our world, yes?
Mm.
And now we have one running for president.
Yeah, absolutely. And in my book, I've got just maybe a joke, I don't know, but in November, vote for a woman president because you may have a choice between Condoleezza and Hillary. You may not, I don't know. But both would be credible candidates. And wouldn't it be a great election to have one woman running against another woman?
Yes.
And with the Republicans, no clear front runner at the moment, maybe there will be a woman candidate. Who knows?
Well, we were talking about the possibility of people coming together amongst themselves and starting a movement toward massive change. And whether it's people one-to-one connecting in order to massively affect, you know, what dolphin tuna we're buying, or even politically, I think we all hold inside of us that belief in that possibility that we can connect with others who are thinking and feeling the same way as we, and that collectively we can act to affect significant change. And that very thing may be even happening here in the U.S. politically. I know there's a significant movement happening on the Internet, and there is a leading candidate in the Republican arena by way of Internet polls, but not in the mainstream media. So that's something where, you know, as we go forward in our respective individual efforts to have a positive impact in the world, we're also butting up against certain forces that are kind of working against us, aren't we?
Yes and no. I mean, the Internet has freed up the media. I devote quite a lot of the book to ideas for free media. You know, you can listen to programs, you can publish books, you can get your news on your desktop, and you can get it from a variety of sources. You're not just beholden to the big press conglomerates, news conglomerates now. And people are getting information in all sorts of different ways. Mm. One of our leading newspapers during the Iraq War had a wonderful column by the Baghdad blogger, giving the inside story of what was happening on the streets in Baghdad in a way that no journalist could. And that was done on the Internet. And I think there's another example, which is a thing in Korea called Oh My News, which is citizen reporters. They've created a news channel of people who provide news to them from wherever they are, not professional journalists, but just people. Citizen reporters. And there's an interesting book you can download for free called We the Media by Dan Gilmore, a US book, all about this new movement in freeing up the media and the way the Internet is connecting people.
Yes. We have about 10 minutes left in the show, and I'd like to just ask you, what advice do you have for we Americans being caught in our patterns?
I don't think the advice is any different from anyone else. I think you Americans, we English, us Europeans, wherever we are on the planet, my advice is that we should be more aware of the impact we're having on the world around us, because the impact, if you just look at what's happened to the world over the last 100 years in terms of pollution, depletion of resources and so on, and now global warming, has been nothing short of disastrous, and that we try to adjust our lives in small ways that will make a difference to the problem. And interestingly, you don't have to give up everything to live in a fairer, more sustainable world. You just have to live a little bit differently.
It says right here on your website, 365act.com, how to make a difference one day at a time. Please speak a little bit about what's going on with 365act.com and how that website, what people will find there, and how that's serving as a connect point.
Well, it's a sort of connect point. It's, again, going back to talking about the media, the website attracts quite a lot of traffic, not as much as I would like, so I hope more people will log on. And what I do on the website is I ask people to submit their ideas, submit their favorite websites, submit books that have inspired them. I have a weekly blog which I send out with interesting ideas of things that people can do or new issues I've come across. And I do a newsletter for people who subscribe to it on the website. So I'm trying to connect people, but this is a one-person operation.
Yes.
Without any charitable funding whatsoever. And I'm doing half a dozen other things at the same time in trying to set up my own projects to change the world. So, I do my best.
Absolutely. And, well, we know how that feels. We know how that feels. Yeah, and really, that's the point, isn't it? I mean, do your best.
Yeah.
Do what you can do.
And enjoy it. And really, really, really enjoy it. In the American edition of the book, we highlight something called Act for Love, and it's a sophisticated dating agency. It says, change the world and meet your match. And in a way, that's a motto for the book, not to meet your match, but change the world and have a great time doing it. And have a smile on your face. It's interesting. Someone did some research on philanthropists and discovered they lived longer because they were happier. So if you give a bit of your money away to other people, it makes you happier. It gives a smile on your face, a bit of spring in your step, and you will live a bit longer as well. So philanthropy is not just doing things for other people. It's actually giving your life more meaning and being happier with it.
Yes, yes. Boy, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I came across your book here in San Francisco a few months ago, and I just was going through it and was just so taken by the thoughtfulness of each idea and the fact that each page gives you something, you know, that you can do.
Yeah, I mean, I describe it as sort of a lavatory book, that you put it in the bathroom and you spend a minute or two there every day and you read your entry for the day and get inspired by it. Or it's a book that you can systematically go through day by day and try and do everything, which I don't recommend because it's too heroic. It's a sort of pick-and-mix book to find things that inspire you. It's a book to give your kids because they need to get a better take on the world and its problems. They've got longer to live with the mess that we've created for them. I think it's a fun book because it's full of interest. There's just interesting things that I've found. And just as an example, I was looking at recycling those cell phone sort of covers, and someone in England has produced something out of biodegradable plastic, and they've embedded a sunflower seed in it. So when you finish with your cell phone cover, you plant it out in the garden, and it will decay in the soil, and a sunflower will grow in its stead. Now, I think it's a lot of fun, actually, and it draws attention to the fact that we do throw out waste, and it does pollute, and we can do something about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're speaking today with Michael Norton. He is available at 365act.com, where you can read all about his various work, connect with his blog, get various ideas from all types of different emailers that have been putting their own ideas on the website, and share your own thoughts and help yourself and others get oriented towards doing your role in making the world a better place. Michael, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Martin.
Thank you
so much.
I just want to say that I appreciate connecting with people who have been dedicating their lives to focusing others in a positive direction. We just get so busy with everything that we do in our lives that we get focused, as Michael was speaking, towards goals outside of ourselves, towards being better, making more money, accomplishing this or that. And we're waking up now, so many of us, to the reality that a lot of things that are manifesting in our world are not exactly quite going the way that we feel would be serving us, whether it's in our bodies, our minds, our spirits, our economy, and all these areas, and our environment, clearly, and also our community structures, that the more that we can reorient ourselves and connect with others that are thinking and feeling the same way, because when we really do get in these conversations, we find that most of us are thinking and feeling the same way. We're just not necessarily behaving consistent with how we're feeling. So if we just spend some time listening to incredible speakers like Mr. Michael Norton, author of this book, going to his website, and just filling our heads full of these ideas, then naturally they'll start coming out. Somehow, someday, somewhere, one of our listeners right now to this show is going to be out there walking around, and the thought's going to be stimulated, and that's everything. That awareness is the key to making all change in all areas of our lives, is just beginning to shift our habitual patterns. So next time you're buying a coffee, you're going to be thinking, oh, is this free trade coffee? What does that mean? Just asking yourself that question will reorient you towards, am I making a healthier choice? Is this a good thing? What will my personal action do and affect an impact in the world here? And we continue to rebuild and remind ourselves of the power of our choices and the power of our choices that stem from our personal intentions. And if it is your intention to be a healthy human being, if it is your intention to be positively affecting the world, if it is your intention to be living from your heart, from your soul, from whatever it is that's within inside you that is meant to be a positive contributor to the world and a positive co-creator, then it is your default way of being to be aligned towards making healthy choices and being a healthy individual. And it's to that end that we're here every single week speaking about various subjects that affect every aspect of our world, every component of healthful living. So on Reality Sandwich, we aim to bring you every single week different subject matter, different interviews, different topics to help empower your choices and to help remind you that all change begins with you and your choices and your personal intentions. My name is Martin Mack, clinical and medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living. You can read more about me and my co-host, Julie Matthews. He'll be back next week as we'll interview the Prison Focus gentleman here on the show. You can read about us at healthfulliving.org, and you can get this show and all past shows of Reality Sandwich at realitysandwichradio.com. This is 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.